everybody. This is Pastor Buddy, and I'm joining you live tonight, right here around the world on WWRB 3.185, part two of The Mysteries of the Earth coming up. We're glad to have you aboard. We got a great program for you. We want you to know that Yahweh is a strong tower, and the Bible said the righteous run into it, and they are safe. Well, if they're safe and you're secure tonight, then you know the mysteries of the Bible, and you know the things that Yahweh wants you to understand, that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Yah. How can you hear without a preacher, and how can he preach except if he's sent? Well, we're sitting here tonight to help you understand some of the great mysteries of the earth. We're going to start tonight in part two of this series where we left off last night in the triangle. Now, that's an area known as the Bermuda Triangle. It actually starts in, if you were standing in, say, like Miami, then you would go out to Bermuda, you would go over to Puerto Rico, and then you'd come back to Miami, and that's called the Bermuda Triangle. Many, many unsolved mysteries and many questions abound in this particular area of probably 500,000 to 600,000 square miles of nothing but water. Turbulent at times. Unexplained happenings at times. A lot of planes have mysteriously disappeared. Nothing ever heard from them. Maybe five planes in a squadron all disappeared in the 40s and were never heard from. These were Navy pilots, well-trained, and when the last radio transmission was picked up, they were disoriented. They didn't really know where they were going. And one of the reported radio transmission was, "Don't come after us. They look like they are from outer space." Isn't that strange? Strange accounts. Well, the genesis of the Bermuda Triangle legend, which was reported in the Associated Press Dispatch in September the 16th, 1950, in which reporter E.V. W. Jones made note of what he characterized as a mysterious disappearance of ships and planes between the Florida coast and Bermuda. 2 years later, in an article in Fate magazine, used to be one of my favorite magazines, by the way, George X. Sand recounted a series of strange marine disappearances, each leaving no trace whatsoever, that had taken place in the past few years, and in a watery triangle boundaried roughly by Florida, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico. M.K. Jessup picked up some of the same stories in his 1955 book, The Case for the UFO, which suggested that alien intelligence were responsible for these strange magnetic powers and unexplained in this area that only happens, it seems like, in two places on the earth. And that's called the Bermuda Triangle, the one we're going to study tonight. And the other lays over in the Sea of Japan, and it's called the Devil's Triangle. The deadly Bermuda Triangle, a soon nearly ever-popular book of mysteries, and people do like a good mystery, and it included sections on the triangle off the coast of Miami, and others called it the Devil's Triangle, which is the one I mentioned to you in the Sea of Japan, or the Hoodoo Z, Ivan T. Sanderson, author of Invisible Residence. Now, that's a strange title for a book. It was printed in 1970, cited as evidence of the intelligent technology that is advanced in this area, underwater civilization, which I told you last night that they have found the vast columns, paved highways, archways, large marble buildings. The sonar image has picked this up, and it's been documented by, of all people, this independent firm that is working in unison with the authority of Fidel Castro, who is interested himself in discovering these ancient artifacts in the hopes that it would increase tourism to the island and make it once again a prosperous place, since the United States has embargoed goods and services from the mainland. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that that would, you know, if you build a better mousetrap, the world would be the path to your door, as the old saying goes. And I'm sure if Mr. Fidel Castro could come into possession of scientific knowledge, that this great city, which has been mapped out with sonar, that I've already discussed with you, it's an open secret, and yet it seems that the rest of the world is turning its back, especially the United States and its scientists. There's been plenty, and I talked to you last night, there's 13 books that has been written about the Bermuda Triangle. And some of the books, it says that they have solved the mystery. And some of the books say it's just a manufactured mystery. And in the book, The Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved, Larry Kusch went into the digging into the other writers, and he reported that weather records and reports of official investigating agencies, newspaper accounts, and other documents indicated that the triangle literature had played fast and loose with the evidence, and that there was no more mysterious disappearance in this area as there was in other areas of the oceans of the earth. However, some of these are noted, like the five planes that took off, you would think. And the weather was clear, not a cloud in sight. And then when they got in this particular triangle area, they vanished without a trace. And 13 books been written to this and trying to solve the mystery of this place upon Earth that is now looking like a mystery that will continue for a long, long time. The triangle's proponents have been able to mount credible defense, and that the triangle claim is authentic, and that they have asked questions that even science will not dare to tackle. Now, there's a lot of personal accounts of men that have lived to tell about this place, and they have gone into a lot of the explanations of really just exactly what happened in this area. Well, if you really want to know what happened, ladies and gentlemen, you would have to go beneath the waters. Now, I told you last night that a doctor who was scuba diving that off the coast of Bimini, that he was hit by a propeller of a ship or a boat that crossed him when he surfaced, and it wreaked havoc by hitting him in the head and knocking him unconscious. Well, what happened was that he tells an incredible story about this beautiful place that he went to. He saw this large pyramid beneath the ocean, and it was, to his estimation, and I think he was sort of told that it was in this area 700, which would dwarf the largest structure on earth known to man, is the giant pyramid in Egypt, and it is 13 acres at the base, 13 acres, and over 2.5 million stones, limestone, that are cut and placed so close together without any cement that you can't get a razor blade in between the two stones. Well, now you talk about precision. Who had the ability? The Egyptians? I don't think so. Are we coming upon the fact that our earth is much older than we ever dreamed about, because we are locked in this Christian Catholic mode of thinking that Adam was the first man, and he wasn't, and that Adam is the father of all of humanity, and he isn't. And so right away, we can discount the convictions of most of the people upon the earth, because they literally take the Bible and say that Adam was created in the beginning. In the beginning of what era? Now, we know that Adam is a product from another planet. That goes without saying. He was a transplant. Are these cities that lay beneath, that have been identified through sonar and satellite images, we know something's down there, and we have no idea that there's a city down there. What, like I said last night, the five oceans cover almost two-thirds of the earth. And the earth is a pretty big place, although it's a small planet compared to others around it. As I said, it's the third planet from our sun, and it's in the inner ring of the four planets that's involved in the inner ring with five planets outside the ring. We're the fourth planet. What's going on? He had mighty ones from the heavens descend in long periods of raining with man. The Bible said an angel is a little bit greater than a man. Just a little bit now. It says a little bit. Now, if the angels were quite capable, and in it gives the size of these giant angels, I'm talking about 36 to 40 feet high, and I know you can't imagine that, but that would just be child's play for someone that big to lay these marvelous stones. Be just like you picking up a brick. A couple of them could probably lift a couple of tons of stone and place it on a wall. Whether they did that or not, I believe they had technology that didn't have to do that. I believe that it involved magnetic display of rendering the stones weightless. Now we have a unusual circumstance down in Coral Gables, Florida, where one man built an entire estate, his own, by himself. Enormous gates he hung by himself, pure stone. These gates weigh several tons each, and they open and shut with precision, with just a push of a finger. He wanted to share the technology that he had on how to quarry and move these huge, enormous stones by, he did all of it by himself. There was no known heavy equipment. Never was there ever, his neighbors testified, that there was never a large piece of equipment seen going through those gates while this individual lived there. When he tried to share his technology with the world laughed him to scorn. It insulted him and offended him, and as far as we know, he died with that technology in his mind, and it was never revealed. Not one shred of evidence of how he did this. It's a mystery. Where did he get the technology? Was this technology what the ancients used to build these enormous temples all the way from the Yucatan down into the area of the Bermuda Triangle and across the Atlantic, where we have the fabled tale of Atlantis? And I gave you a little discourse last night about Edgar Cayce, who prophesied in a dream state. Actually, he was in trance state, and he spoke about these beautiful lands that now lay beneath the ocean, far advanced in technology to the rate of our technology today. He said it wouldn't even compare, and wouldn't for centuries, that man would not catch up with what these beings that ruled in Atlantis and in the lost continent of the Pacific called Moon, that there was strange technologies, and one of those was harnessing the powers of the universe, the energy that created, or that was used to create, that they had tapped into the mystery element of this great power, something like atomic energy, and yet it was more natural. It wasn't man-made. It was the Creator laced the heavens with this energy, and it was available to all of mankind to search out and to figure out just exactly what had happened. I'd like to give you one of the best known encounters in modern times. There's many encounters. I'll just share this one with you by Bruce Giron, Jr. On December the 4th, 1970, Bruce and his father, who had built up a successful real estate brokerage in South Florida when he was in his early 20s, Bruce had already achieved about 600 hours of flying time and was very, very familiar with Florida and the Bahamas. However, none of this prepared him for an encounter which for over 30 years still puzzles him And for those of you who have been studying the triangle, if you know about this encounter, it's very strange. When he gave his account and sworn to it, it's mentioned in the first book of 1977 and Charles Berlitz's sequel, Without a Trace. And Bruce is mentioned in here by Charles. And also by Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious Universe. Mr. Bruce Geron, he made both of these books in the accounts, and both of the writers quote him and tells his story. Now, this is the first time that it has been made readily available to an internet people that is now have a touch of a button, so to speak, a book that they can download if you're interested in reading his account. And he's, when he told this account, he was amazed at his encounter, and he wrote down details shortly after it happened because he was so taken, and it began to do some his own investigating into the mysteries of this as a result of what happened to him. Now, he's going to tell you in his best memory of 30 years ago that he had discovered flying in the triangle many times. He crossed it. And here is his story. My dad and I had been flying our own plane in the Bahamas since 1967. We had made at least a dozen flights to and from the Andros Islands, and everything seemed normal on that fateful day in December, just after 3 p.m., when my dad and I, whose name Chuck, a business associate, Chuck Lafayette, was also on board, and they lifted off the runway at Andrews Town Airport in a brand new Beechcraft Bonanza A-36. And you flying buffs probably know all about that particular plane. It's a very dependable plane. It was shortly after takeoff that when I noticed an elliptical cloud directly in front of us that appeared suddenly about a mile away, hovering only about 500 feet above the ocean. The rest of the sky was clear blue. I had never seen a cloud so low. And remember, he's saying it's 500 feet above the ocean. And the Miami Flight Service reported over the VHF radio that the weather was good, and so they continued. But the cloud quickly changed into a huge cumulus cloud. We began to climb at 1,000 feet per minute, trying to pull up above it, and the cloud seemed to be building up at the same rate. I had never seen a cloud act like this. And unexpectedly, it caught up and engulfed the Bonanza. And after 10 minutes of climbing in and out of this cloud, the airplane finally, after 10 minutes, broke free at 11,500 feet, and the sky was perfectly clear. I leveled the Bonanza off and accelerated to its maximum safe cruising speed of 195 miles an hour. Quite shaken on the encounter, and I had never seen a cloud act like this, I looked back at the cloud and I was astonished. It now looked like an immense squall, abnormally shaped in the form of a giant semicircle extended around us. Visibility was about 10 miles, and the cloud continued beyond my perception. So it must have been more than 20 miles long. And after a few minutes, I lost sight of it. Soon, to our amazement, we noticed another cloud building again directly in front of us, forming out of thin air. Where the space was clear, we now had a cloud directly in front of us. And now, by this time, I am beginning to be quite concerned. And we're now near the Bimini Islands. It looked like a great deal. It looked a great deal like the cloud that we had just left. Except that its top now was at least 60,000 feet high, I estimated. And when we came within a few miles of it, we saw that it appeared to emanate directly from the surface of the earth. And upon entering the cloud, once again, with no choice, we witnessed an uncanny spectacle. The cloud suddenly became dark and black, but no rain. And visibility was cut down drastically, and there were no lightning bolts, only extraordinarily bright white flashes that would emulate the entire surrounding area. The deeper we penetrated into the cloud, the more intense the flashes became, and so we made a 135-degree turn to the left and headed due south out of the cloud. We had been flying for 27 minutes, and we thought that we might be able to fly around the cloud. But after 6 or 7 miles, we saw that it continued in a near-perfect curve to the east. And after 2 more minutes, it became apparent that the cloud near Andros and the cloud near Bimini were actually opposite sides of the same ring-shaped body. The cloud must have formed just off the Andros Island and then rapidly spread outward into the shape of a donut with a diameter of 30 miles. And to me, this seemed impossible. But there it was, with no explanation. We were trapped inside a billowing prison with no way under or over it or out of it. 13 miles later, I noticed a large U-shaped opening on the west side of the donut cloud. I had no choice but to turn and try to exit through the opening. As we approached, we watched the top ends of the U-gap join, forming a hole. And the break in the cloud now formed a perfect horizontal tunnel, 1 mile wide and more than 10 miles long. And we could see the clear blue sky on the other side through the tunnel. I had never seen nothing like this in my life. I was terrified. We also saw that the tunnel was rapidly shrinking. So I increased the engine RPMs, bringing our speed to the caution area of 230 miles per hour, trying to escape. And when we entered the tunnel, its diameter had narrowed to only 200 feet. I was amazed at what the shaft looked like. It appeared to be only a mile long instead of 10 plus, as I had originally estimated, and the light from the afternoon sun shone brilliantly through the exit hole and made the silky white walls glow. The walls were perfectly round and slowly constricting. All around the edges were small puffs of clouds, of a contrasting gray swirling counterclockwise motion around the plane. We were in a tunnel for no longer than 20 seconds before we emerged from the other end. For about 5 seconds, I had the strange feeling of weightlessness and an increased forward momentum, like something had picked me up from the top and was hurling me forward. When I looked back, I grasped to see the tunnel walls collapse and form a slit that slowly rotated clockwise. And when that happened, all of our electronic magnetic navigational instruments went into malfunction. The compass, I had never seen the compass act like this after many, many hundreds of hours of flying, was slowly spinning even as the aircraft flew straight. I contacted mine and told them that we were about 45 miles southeast of Bimini, heading east at 10,500 feet. The radar controller replied that he was unable to identify us anywhere in that area. And then something bizarre happened. Instead of the blue sky, we expected everything was a dull, grayish-white haze. And then visibility seemed like more than 2 miles, and yet we could not see the ocean. The horizon or the sky, we couldn't see either. The air was so very stable, and there was no lightning or rain, and I like to refer to this as an electronic fog, because that's what it reminded me of. With the instruments going crazy because it seemed to be something that was interfering with our instruments. I had to only use my imagination to feel our way west, or flying blind, as we pilots used to say, without instrumentation. We were in the electronic fog for 3 minutes. Suddenly the controller radioed that he had identified an airplane directly over Miami Beach, flying due west. I looked at my watch and saw that we had been flying for less than 34 minutes. We could have not have reached Miami. We should have been approaching the Bimini Islands. I told the controller that he must have identified another airplane and that we were approximately 90 miles southwest of Miami and still looking for Bimini. Suddenly, the fog started breaking apart. And in a weird sort of electronic fashion, long horizontal lines appeared in the fog on either side of us, like a streaking dozen rockets that would streak out in front of us. And then in a weird sort of way, these horizontal lines looked like they were 4 to 5 miles long, and they just appeared. We saw blue sky through them. The slits continued, expanded, and joined together within 8 or 10 seconds, and all the slits joined, and the gray fog disappeared. All I could see was brilliant blue sky as my pupils adjusted to the increase in brightness. And there, then I saw the barrier island of Miami Beach directly below, and I could not, and neither could my companions, believe that we were in Miami in that length of time. After we landed at Palm Beach, I realized that the flight had taken a little less than 47 minutes. And I thought, well, something must be wrong with the airplane's timer. And yet all three of our watches showed that it was exactly 3:48 p.m. before I made a note, being surprised at how quick that we had made the trip. I had never and I'd flown it many times, made it from Andrews Island to Palm Beach in less than 75 minutes, even on a direct route. Our course on this flight was quite indirect and probably covered close to 250 miles. How could the airplane, fly or travel 250 miles in 47 minutes? At the rate of our speed, it's impossible. And yet it happened. There we were sitting on the field at Palm Beach, and I couldn't believe it. I still have trouble believing what happened. We taxied over to customs, ending the flight. And here, I could not logically understand what had happened during that flight, although I felt it was significant and reviewed it in my mind several times a day. In 1972, I heard about the so-called Bermuda Triangle and disappearances of boats and airplanes, and folks, you just won't believe how many boats and airplanes have disappeared in this area or become disoriented, like Bruce here, because of a possible time warp. I figured that it was one of those quirks of nature. However, since then, I have begun to realize that time itself, being mastered or controlled by some power unknown, was the key to this mystery that happened to me in 1972. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it goes on and on and on and on in telling us about the things that had taken place. It took us 4 minutes of flying at 190 miles an hour through the tunnel, and since it appeared to be between 10 and 15 miles long, instead, this is precisely how long it took for us to leave the storm and reach clear skies. The remarkable thing is that we did not come out of the storm 90 miles away from Miami as we should have. We had traveled through 100 miles of space in 30 minutes of time. In a little more than 3 minutes. It should have took 30 minutes. It took them 3 minutes. And before he knew it, he was in Miami. And he said he had never made that trip that fast. Now, he said, I didn't notice any colors other than the shades of gray. It was like the color of a fog. That is one of the reasons I call it electronic fog. I have seen what is known as the green flash in the Florida Keys 3 times. It is fluorescent lime color, and it has lasted for about 10 seconds up to 1 minute. However, I had never encountered the fog flying directly through it in this manner, and that time was very distorted. I did notice turbulence that was related to the fog, like there was something in the fog itself causing the disturbances and causing our airplane to speed up. And yet the instruments showed that we never got above 230 miles per hour on our speedometers. And this electronic fog attached itself to the airplane, just like we had been wrapped in the arms of some mysterious electromagnetic force and hurled for 100 miles in less than 3 minutes. He says, I still cannot comprehend what had happened. I have never had it to happen since. But I got very leery of flying in this area. We watched it for over 30 minutes. It came within 1 mile from us, and it was 100 feet in diameter when we noticed a UFO, what we would describe as an unidentified flying object. Since then, I have seen many. And the first one I saw was in 1957 in Florida, and it was spectacular. I witnessed it with 8 other family members, and it was spiraled in shape and performed many impossible man-made maneuvers. We watched it for over 30 minutes, and it came within 1 mile from us, and it was about 100 feet in diameter and white in color, and I believe it was a form of ball lightning, or it had the appearance of that I knew as ball lightning. But I knew that it wasn't ball lightning. I knew it was a UFO. I have seen UFOs that may have been associated with the storm I flew through. The first one was only a month after I flew through the storm. We were flying at night, about 9:30, in February, and the weather was very good, and we were over Miami at 10,000 feet and headed due west toward Bimini. When we got a few miles offshore, we noticed an amber light far to the east of us. Suddenly, it came toward us at an incredible speed, like it was on a collision course with us, and within seconds, it was right in front of us. It was bright amber and shaped like a saucer with a diameter of about 300 feet. It was massive. And I felt that its mass was of a solid nature and not just a form of light. I banked to the left to avoid a certain collision. When I looked back to see where it was, it had vanished. It may have been an illusion, although we both saw the exact same thing. It was interesting to note that the UFO was on the same flight path that I had traveled when I went through the time tunnel and encountered this electronic fog that has haunted my mind since 1972. I noticed that there was a full moon. And it came up over the horizon about an hour later, and I thought there must be a correlation. And about a year later, I had a feeling that I might see a UFO on a flight back from the Carolinas. And sure enough, a UFO suddenly appeared, and we even photographed it. And he's got the picture here that I'm reading from. And it was the same shape and the same size as the one that I almost collided with, and the full moon came up about an hour after we witnessed it. After another year, I had a feeling that I might again see the same UFO, and offshore, we drove to the beach in Delray at night, and an hour before the full moon, we saw 5 UFOs in formation traveling at an incredible speed from north to south, all heading toward Bimini. And they were the same shape and color as the ones that I have seen previously. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce is a very sane individual, a trained pilot, sound in logic and mind, and even today, he wonders what happened on that fateful day when he was flying from the islands over to Miami and the encounters and the strange formation. He now believes that there was a power propulsion unit in the cloud and that somehow that this unit had developed the cloud, the swirling mass, or the tunnel that he created in the openings and the streams, where he could see a blue through the stream. He now believes that this was the key to the mystery, that it was some type of an intelligent craft that could manipulate clouds and things of this nature that I've described to you in his witness. And he now believes that there is a vortex like a time tunnel or Stargate. And I've talked a lot on the Stargates, and it's a great mystery. So if you would like to know more about this encounter, you can read Bruce's accounts at keyprop@bellsouth.net, and you can have his story for yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a marvelous mystery. What would cause these anomalies? And what would cause the great mysteries, and why are they so guarded at this particular place in the earth? Is it, as Mr. Casey said, that this region of the water is due to raise, the landmass will raise, the water will drain from this basin in this area, and there will be exposed for all of the earth to see a marvelous city laying beneath the sea? Man, what a marvelous thing to happen. It will prove that we've not been alone, we never have been alone, and that perhaps that we weren't the first ones here. And it could be that we're not going to be the last ones. There is a lot of royal mysteries coming down the pike. And ladies and gentlemen, we know for sure that the time is at hand, that we need to be about our Father's business. We need to pray and ask Yahweh to lead us and to guide us and to help us to reach the conclusion that we're not alone, that there are times and places where these strange anomalies happen. Airplane pilots, commercial pilots, Air Force, military, there is sightings all over the world of strange anomalies. Things that are happening right here upon the earth. And we believe, and we've taught on this on the wormhole that I talked about and did several hours on this subject, that in 2012, at the point of the crossing, there is a black hole that is in the heavens, right in the center of the Milky Way at the elliptical plane of crossing in 2012, where there is a stargate. It's called a black hole. It's visible, actually, from the earth. And I believe that this is the prison or the tomb that Satan was bound in until the time when he's to be loosed for a little season upon the earth. Now, a little season could be 100 years, 150. It could be 25 years, 10 years, 5 years, or 3 months. Who knows? However, I do believe that our present government is aware. They've already examined these places, these energy places, these vortexes, these worm gates, wormholes, stargates, and things of this nature. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to miss part 3 as we go into a little deeper on the mysteries of the things that are on the earth, in the earth, and under the earth, and above the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Pastor Brendan Shepherd's Call. Glad to have you aboard tonight. This is a Tuesday night with a late call. Glad you set up with us, praise Yahweh, and hope and trust that you've been blessed by the account of the things that we have witnessed to you to get ready. For there is coming a day of trouble. Satan is going to be loosed from his prison, and he's going to go out to make war with all of the saints, them that love Yahweh and keep his commandments. We're in for a time of trouble such as the world has never seen. I'm sponsored tonight by Brother Mark and Sister Audrey down in the great state of Mississippi. If you'd like to have this series, simply write Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 2284. Now that's Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee. Brother John is wanting to get in here and push me out of here. Again, Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee, the zip 37824. You can call me tonight. I'm live around the world on the transmitting Jewel South, WWRB 3.185, simulcast, and also on worldwide internet. Glad you're joining us wherever you are. You can call me at area code 423-626-2172. Again, Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee, the zip 37824. Now, if you'd like to call me again, area code 423-626-2172. Just request our series, The Mysterious Earth. And ladies and gentlemen, above us in the heavens is more mysteries than we could ever solve in a lifetime. Soon to open is the prison of Satan, and he's coming to the earth. You better get ready, because he's going to deceive the very elect. What a change, transformation coming up on planet Earth. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow night around the world on the transmitting Jewel of the South at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'll see you then. I love you.
Against the priests. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet they'll cast a golden crown. Let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down there. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come.